And good morning. It is 9 o'clock on this sunny Wednesday morning. You are tuned to KBBI and KDLL. It is time once again for the Coffee Table program, and we've got a special show today. Our guest this morning is you. It's an open lines coffee table this morning here on KDLL and KBBI. Lots to talk about, and really what drove the an open lines coffee table this morning is the idea that over the next several weeks, we're going to be doing everything that we can do to get as many public service candidates in here as we possibly can, folks running for office, to see where they stand on the issues. But before we get into that series of meeting candidates, finding out what they think about things, we wanted to open up our lines to you, to our listeners, to find out what things you're thinking about as we get into election season, and also just maybe to chew the fat a little bit, see how your summer's going out there. So as we get started here, of course, we want to throw out the phone numbers. 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners up here on the Central Peninsula. And if you're tuned into KBBI on the Southern Peninsula, it's a local call, 235-7721. And you can also reach us on Facebook. Both the KBBI and KDLL stations have our Facebook pages open, and we'll be looking for your comments there as well, if that's the best way for you to get in touch with us this morning. And again, tons of issues that we could discuss this morning, and we want to hear from you what's on your mind. To begin with, I think we'll start talking about the big ballot propositions. The signs are going up everywhere, all over the peninsula. And we'll just start at the beginning of the list. Ballot Proposition 1. This is the vote on the repeal of SB 21. Now, of course, I'm sure most of you are quite familiar with what SB 21 is. It's this new oil tax legislation that was passed by the legislature this year. It replaced the old ACES system that came in under the Palin administration. And it's supposed to create a lot of new jobs, create a lot of new investment, and most importantly, put more oil in the TAPS line, which of course then pads the coffers of everyone in Alaska. So that's the promise behind SB 21. Of course, not everyone agrees that that's exactly what's going to happen with SB 21. It's been characterized by folks who oppose this tax measure as a giveaway to the oil companies. They feel that there's not enough accountability, there's not enough written in stone language to say, if we give you these tax credits, then you are in turn going to invest this much money or create this many more jobs or produce this many more barrels of oil. And that is really the dividing line on this SB 21 measure. And we want to hear from you. This is an issue up and down the peninsula. It's quite interesting. Again, as the signs come out and we see what areas of the peninsula are supporting what ideas or not supporting certain ideas, what candidates, folks, or businesses are supporting. One thing that I have noticed as you travel from north to south on the Kenai Peninsula is the number of signs and the size of the signs. Up here on the northern peninsula, the central peninsula, we see a lot more signs that say, we want SB 21. Vote no on 1 is the sign. And those signs oftentimes are quite large. They're pretty hard to miss as you're driving around town on the Spur Highway, the Sterling Highway. And especially as you head up the North Road to Nikiski, where I was at yesterday. Governor Parnell was in town yesterday for a couple of bill signings, and we'll chat about that in just a little bit as well. But especially up Nikiski Way, the vote no on 1 folks, signs displayed prominently, and of course that's an area of the peninsula that relies heavily on the oil and gas industry, and so that's no surprise. But then as you move south, down toward the Homer area, toward our friends around Kachemak Bay, the signs shift, and we see a little bit more of an attitude that says we want to overturn this thing. We're not saying that ACES was perfect, but we don't think that this is the step in the right direction. And what's the most interesting thing to me is that the vote yes folks, the folks who want to overturn SB 21, those signs tend to get a little bit smaller, and I don't know if there's a correlation there between the funding for the two campaigns, for the funding for those two opposing ideas, if one side maybe has a little bit more money and can afford those bigger signs and more of them, or if the grassroots effort on the other side maybe isn't faring as well in the finances department in terms of getting their message out. But we certainly do know that there are two sides to this issue, and it's a decision that really it's going to play out in the future. We don't know exactly how this is all going to play out. It's a bit of an experiment, as we all know, and that's why we're asking you, what do you think about SB 21? Is this a good deal for Alaskans, do you think? Is this a good deal for you and for your family? Is this the direction that you think the state should be heading as we move forward and try to get more oil into the TAPS line? We know that that has been on the decline for several years, and supporters of SB 21 will point to the fact that that decline has slowed. It hasn't disappeared. We haven't really increased production yet, but that decline of North Slope oil flowing through the TAPS line has slowed. They point to that as evidence that SB 21 is working, and they also point to announcements made very soon after SB 21 was passed. I'm sure this was no coincidence, about all sorts of new investments, something like $10 billion in new investment after SB 21 was signed into law. And that's, of course, to be expected. The oil companies support SB 21. It's a good thing for them. And again, as supporters say, it opens the door for more investment, and more investment means more money. More money means more jobs, and hopefully more production. So that's a big issue that I can only say so much about, and I'm really hoping that you'll have a few things to say about it. So again, 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners, and if you're tuned into KBBI, it's 235-7721. Ballot Proposition 1, are you for that? Are you against that? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? And you can also reach us on Facebook, too. Don't forget that avenue as well. Social media, very important right now. Another big issue that will be on the ballot, not in August, but in November, is Ballot Proposition 2. And this one deals with legalizing marijuana. And again, there are two camps on this issue. I believe the name of the group is the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. Now, those are the folks who say, let's follow in the steps of Colorado and Washington. Those two states have recently completely legalized marijuana. It's an open industry. It's an open trade now, and we're beginning to see some signs of how this is working out. And one of the earliest signs that we see out of those two states is the increased tax revenue, which shouldn't come as any big surprise, but there are a lot of other concerns, and a lot of states and a lot of folks are taking a wait-and-see approach, or they want to take a wait-and-see approach. And from what I've read and what I've heard folks talk about, is that's what we want to do here in Alaska. We don't necessarily want to follow immediately, just as quickly as we possibly can, in the footsteps of states in the lower 48. As we all like to say, this ain't the lower 48, so why would we do things just like them? We know that so many situations for us here in Alaska are unique to Alaskans, and this situation is no different, because when you look at the history of marijuana regulation in this state, there's a pretty high level of deregulation already on the books. Of course, Alaska is a medicinal marijuana state. There are legal provisions for growing your own plants for personal use, pretty liberal laws in that regard as well. So this is an issue that's going to, I would presume, get a lot more debate. And in fact, it did get a lot of debate yesterday. There was a joint meeting of the Kenai and Soldotna Chambers of Commerce. I was unfortunately not able to make it to that meeting. Again, I was up in Nikiski checking out the governor, watching him sign a few bills. And again, we'll talk about those in just a little bit. But there was a debate yesterday at the Chamber of Commerce. And again, the pro folks on this marijuana issue, the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, they were represented. And also the con side of this debate, big marijuana, big mistake is their tagline. And we can see pretty handily exactly what it is that they feel on that side of the issue. They're not for it. And when you talk to folks, or when you read what folks are saying about it, especially folks who are decidedly on the con side, it's not necessarily always that they are against marijuana. What they tend to be against, at least in what I've read and with whom I've spoken with, what they tend to be against is rushing into it. They want to see if these, we can call them experiments, I suppose. They want to see if these experiments in Colorado and Washington are going to work out. And one of the things that we hear a lot about, of course, is, as we mentioned before, is the increased tax revenue. I mean, we stand to make a lot of money. There's to regulate marijuana like alcohol, of course, the sales figures, because it's a black market thing, are up in the air. But we know there's a lot of folks who buy a lot of marijuana. If you tax that like alcohol, that goes into the state's coffers. That could be a good thing. But one thing that folks are concerned about, because of its illegal status for all these many years, studies are not conclusive about the effects of marijuana on childhood development. We have some broad notions and we have some ideas. But that's a very big concern, especially for educators. And I want to play a bit of tape for you. This comes from back in October. Again, a joint meeting of the Kenai and Soldotna Chambers of Commerce from February, when Representative Don Young was in town. And Representative Young was asked this question, or asked about this issue, rather, by our superintendent of schools, Dr. Steve Atwater. Dr. Atwater was in the audience that day and really was just looking for some position from Representative Young. Is this a good idea, a bad idea? And really the basic question was, what about the kids? Is this healthy for our kids? Is this something that we need to, is this a road that we should really be going down? And here's how Representative Young answered that question. Little technical difficulty. Let's see if we can get this figured out here in just a second. But first, we're going to go to line one. Eric is with us on line one, wants to talk about SB 21. Eric, good morning. You're on Coffee Table.
Hey, good morning. I agree with your premise that where you're seeing more vote no signs is where there might be more support for the referendum than in other areas. But one of the problems we're running into is a lot of our vote yes signs are being stolen. And it's in a matter of days after putting these things up, they're being taken. It's a pretty widespread experience among those people who have are supporting the referendum by putting these signs up in their yards. And the fact that the vote no folks are outspending the vote yes folks 100-1, I think also factors into why the vote no signs are larger and more prolific.
Eric, it sounds like you've spent some time, for lack of a better word, sort of campaigning on this issue. Am I far off there? Have you put some signs out or tried to be active in the issue in some way?
Yes. I'm kind of involved in it in a way, not directly, but I'm supporting the referendum on the vote yes side to the extent that I can.
What are some things, as someone on that side of the issue, and you're seeing this from a different vantage point than I am as a reporter covering it, what are some things for you as a vote yes guy that would help your campaign? I mean, is it strictly a money thing?
Well, you know, one of the things I think about is, those of us that have been around Alaska for a long time, the oil revenue has been just a terrific blessing for us, and it's helped us build an infrastructure almost without equal in any state. And to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to accelerate the production of the oil, get less tax revenue per barrel, and exhaust the resource sooner than it would be if we maximized, if we squeezed every bit of tax revenue we can out of each and every barrel. It's a finite resource, and we're going to be shortchanging our children if we pump it and pump it and get exhaust the resource and have less to show for it.
Yeah, this is a very interesting issue when you get into talking about things like that, because I think if you asked most Alaskans, they would say, yes, we would love to be able to sort of cap, not really cap production, but to be able to put some limits on it so that we can continue to produce this resource, not in perpetuity, but for as long as we possibly can. The problem comes in when Alaska, as an oil-producing region, wants to remain competitive. Is that a concern that you have as you pay attention to this area? Because that's what we hear so much of from the Vote No folks, is we've got to keep Alaska competitive. We've got to keep them in the game. We've got to make it an attractive place for businesses to invest. Do you feel like if there's oil there, people will come, or we need to do what we can to entice people to come?
Well, I think we are competitive. I think we were competitive under ACES. If you take a look at the North Slope employment and the profitability of the oil companies under ACES, it was very strong. And I don't agree that we weren't competitive. I think this whole argument hinges on the idea of who owns the oil. If we consider ourselves an owner state and we own this resource, then we're fully entitled to get a higher take under the scheme of progressivity than we would be under SB 21, where we have a flat take regardless of the price of the oil.
All right, Eric. Well, thank you so much for that call, and thanks for participating in the discussion. Again, this is an issue that we're going to be hearing a lot more about over the next several weeks as we get into the primary season, and this issue becomes even hotter as we get to that final vote and see where it lands. Of course, again, as Eric mentioned, the size of the sign difference and the size of the spending difference, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out at the polls and what effect the differences in spending on the two sides of this debate have on the final vote. But certainly an issue that is, I don't want to say dividing Alaskans, but certainly an issue that is giving Alaskans a good reason to go to the polls this summer and voice their opinion. So Eric, thank you so much for that call. If anyone else, thank you. If you'd like to weigh in on SB 21 or any other topic, we're going to get to talking about fishing here in a little bit, some flooding issues that the borough is dealing with, and also some other broader issues at the borough level. We're going to be talking about those later on this morning as well, but we do want to hear from you. You are the guest this morning here on Coffee Table. And if you're tuned into KDLL, it's a toll-free call. 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners. And if you're tuned into KBBI on the Southern Peninsula, it's a local call, 235-7721. And of course, you can always get in touch with us. Drop us a line on Facebook. Just search for KDLL on Facebook or KBBI on Facebook, and you can drop us a line there, and we can continue the discussion through that medium as well. But I wanted to get back to, that was a little bit about SB 21. We'll probably be getting some more calls about that a little bit later on. Happy to take those. But I wanted to try to get back. Hopefully we've got our technical difficulties straightened out here. We were talking about Proposition 2. That's the marijuana proposition that's coming up in November for the general election. And as I mentioned earlier, Representative Don Young was in town back in February. And when Representative Young is in town, he's pretty good at just fielding questions. You can throw out basically anything you want at him, and he's been in the game long enough that he's got some sort of answer. And the answer that he had for Dr. Atwater, Dr. Steve Atwater, of course, superintendent of Kenai Peninsula School District, Dr. Atwater concerned what this marijuana proposition, the possibility of legalizing marijuana and creating this new industry and opening up the doors and making it legal and getting tax revenue and all of those things. Dr. Atwater, of course, having very legitimate concerns about what impact this has on our youth, on our kids, because, again, due to its legal status all these many years, studies are hard to come by. We don't know as much as we know maybe about some other substances in terms of effects on development of kids. And, of course, just the societal impacts, the cultural impacts, those are going to be something that that'll be, I'm sure, some surprises as well. So we're going to try this one time. Try this one more time. This is Representative Don Young addressing that issue for Dr. Atwater.
Again, I'm a state's rightist, and I don't believe in marijuana. I've watched it. I don't smoke, by the way. I'm not like Clinton. I didn't say I didn't inhale either. But I don't believe, I believe you cannot choose. When I'm, remember you heard I said about states, you cannot choose, and I have some of my more conservative Republican friends say, how can you say that? You can't pick and choose. Either you're for states' rights or you're against it. I mean, it's something that's very dear to me. The other thing that bothers me, this is where I get in trouble, I'm going to say it anyway, the idea we're spending that much money today imprisoning people. You're a school administrator. We spend more money on prisoners than we do on school kids in the United States. We're number one in the world at putting people in prison. Not for violent crimes. Crimes, how do you like that? Crimes. They're put in for misdemeanors. Smoking a pot. Taking place with a violent criminal. And does it do any good? No. If you want to do something to somebody that, if it is considered a crime, at least let them participate in working, contributing back to the community. Don't put somebody in prison that's never accomplished anything unless you're a violent criminal. In that case, she should stay there. But this idea we're filling our jails with nothing. Oh, he broke the law. Okay, but are you helping society by incarcerating him, taking more money for him than a student over here? And that's what we're doing. That's wrong. And so I'm very clear about it. I don't like marijuana. I don't have anything to do with marijuana. But I want you as a state to understand that's your decision. And if you believe in the majority rule, if they vote for it, then that's the way it will be. It can be undone again. But don't say, I'm against marijuana here, but I don't want the government over here. You can't do that. You can't make those individual picking your choices. What else we got? Yes, ma'am.
And that was, again, Representative Don Young addressing a joint meeting of the Kenai and Soldotna Chambers of Commerce back in February, addressing this issue about the possibility of legalizing marijuana in the state. And in all fairness, he really didn't get around to answering Dr. Atwater's question, which was, again, you know, what about the kids? What kind of an impact do you expect for our youth in the state as if this measure were to go through and we have this new industry and this new culture and this and all these new things that we have to deal with that we've never really dealt with before. And Representative Young, while he kind of evaded that end of it, did, in my mind anyway, kind of exemplify one of the drawing lines between this issue. You talk to folks who aren't necessarily for legalizing marijuana, and a lot of times what you find is that it's less about being against the use of the substance. It's less about that and more about not rushing into it. And a lot of times it's supporters will point, again, less toward the hooray aspects, if you will, of using the substance and more toward reducing crime because, again, crime rates are pretty substantial for marijuana offenses and overwhelmingly not equal in terms of race and gender and those sorts of things. And those are problems that some folks on the pro-legalization side hope to amend if these measures go through and as they have in Washington and Colorado. Now we're waiting to see again as those experiments in the lower 48 play out, how those play out and what those long-term effects are. Off the first, I believe, 6 months or so in Colorado, the news is good, but it's only 6 months. They can point to substantially increased tax revenue, which isn't a terribly big surprise. But some of those other effects, the societal effects, are we going to actually use that tax revenue for substance abuse counseling? Are we going to actually decrease incarceration rates, especially among youths and minorities? Is that actually going to happen as is promised a lot of times by the folks who think that legalizing marijuana is a good idea? If you think it's a good idea, if you think it's a bad idea, feel free to give us a call and let us know why. Either way, 1-800-979-5224 is the number if you are tuned into KDLL. And it's a local call, 235-7721 for our KBBI listeners, or you can check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line there. We're checking that out throughout the show this morning as well. Would love to hear from you on our social media outlets. So we've hit up SB 21. That's ballot proposition one. Of course, that's going to be on the ballot in August. You'll be able to voice your opinion on that issue in August for SB 21, the oil tax legislation. Proposition 2, the marijuana legalization ballot measure, that's not coming up until the general election in November. And again, an open lines coffee table this morning, hoping to hear from you. You are the guest this morning. In the next several weeks, we're hoping to get just as many candidates as we possibly can can fit into our studios here at KDLL and KBBI, so you can have a chance to meet them, to ask them questions, find out where they stand on issues. But right now, we're more interested in finding out where you stand on some of these issues. So we're going to hopefully take some more calls. Again, 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners, and 235-7721, a local call for our listeners on the Southern Peninsula. Or you can check us out on Facebook. Just look for KDLL or KBBI. I want to move into some more local issues. The last few borough meetings have been pretty lengthy affairs. And of course, July is a busy month. The borough assembly takes the middle meeting off because, well, it's July. We're busy. The fish are here and we're busy, and they take that that middle meeting off most years. And so it's not a terribly big surprise to see some longer agendas on either end of that month. And we've seen that. The last couple of meetings have gone almost until midnight, right up until that point where they have to say stop, and we'll come back and try to finish up tomorrow. We haven't had to do that yet, but we have tackled some big issues and still waiting on some resolution on some of these issues. One of the biggest issues that's been debated at the borough level recently is this proposed bed tax. And we spent a good deal of time actually last week on Coffee Table discussing the bed tax. There was a final vote of 5-4 supporting implementing, it's called a bed tax. That's the shorthand for an area-wide transient accommodations tax, I believe is the legal proper nomenclature for the thing, but it's a bed tax, and they're looking at 3-4%. I can't remember exactly. There have been a lot of amendments made to this thing over the past several weeks, but 3-4% bed tax. And of course, we know our friends over in Seward already have a bed tax, and they say nothing but good things about the bed tax. They've been able to take that money, reinvest it in tourism and marketing efforts, and draw more folks in. Of course, the past couple of borough assembly meetings, we've heard some support for the bed tax, and of course, the borough as a whole voted just barely in favor. Again, 5-4 vote in favor of adopting this ordinance that would add a bed tax to borough code. But the no votes and the non-supporters, if you will, they're not too sure that that's going to happen everywhere, and they see it as just another tax on Alaskans, and that's not something we like. We're a state that enjoys no income tax, and we have this great PFD that comes at us, and it's an interesting tax structure, certainly in this state, and they don't want to see another tax added. And then, of course, this is an issue that we're curious to see what you think about. When you travel around the peninsula, do you look to see if a municipality or an area in the unincorporated parts of the borough, if they have a bed tax? Is this something that factors into your decision where you stay? If you go to Anchorage, do you camp instead of staying in a hotel because of their, I believe, 12 or 12.5% bed tax? When you travel to the lower 48, where bed taxes are, I don't want to say ubiquitous, but pretty darn close to ubiquitous, is that something that factors into your decision when you travel? Because as this debate has gone on for the past several weeks, a couple of months almost, that's what we hear a lot of, is that this will deter people from staying in our local beds and breakfasts and our local lodges, that this is an added expense that we're going to have to pass on to our visitors. And we don't want to do that because so many of our visitors do come from in-state. And we're still seeing, it's beginning to tail down, but we're still seeing that rush of folks from Anchorage and the Mat-Su Valley to come down and enjoy our great fishing opportunities. So we're going to get into a break here at the bottom of the hour. Again, throw out the numbers. Hopefully we can get some people lined up as we come back for the second half of the show. Talk a little bit. talk a little bit about the bed tax as we come back to the second half of the show. And also, we want to get into talking fishing. It is that time of year, and hopefully you've been able to get some dip nets out in the water, get your freezers filled with sockeye that have been coming back in sort of staggered numbers. But we'll get into that in just a little bit. Right now, though, we are going to take a break. And again, remind you, the phone number is 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners. And if you're tuned into on the Southern Peninsula, to KBBI, it's a local call, 235-7721. Be sure to give us a call. Let us know what you think about some of these important issues that we're going to be talking about even more in the second half of the show. We're going to take a break right now, though. Stay with us. And welcome back again. You are tuned to the coffee table this morning here on KDLL and KBBI. It's an open lines coffee table. That means you are the guest. We'd love to hear your questions, concerns, comments, whatever you'd like to talk about, issues facing Alaskans, issues facing the Kenai Peninsula. Give us a call, 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners. And if you're tuned into KBBI on the Southern Peninsula, it's a local call, 235-7721. And of course, you can get in touch with us on Facebook as well. Just search for KDLL or KBBI. You can drop us a line there. We're checking that throughout the show this morning also. And it looks like we had a call on line one, but dropped over the break. So if you got dropped, give us a call back. Again, 1-800-979-5224 is the toll-free number for our KDLL listeners on the Central Peninsula. And it's a free local call, 235-7721 for our listeners on KBBI. We're having kind of a bit of bad luck keep getting these phone calls online, so just keep trying. We will get you on the air. We want to hear your questions again. Open Lines Coffee Table this morning. You are the guest. We want to hear from you. And we do have another call on line one. It's Carla. Welcome to Coffee Table, Carla. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I have just been thinking about the bed tax, and I think that there are some valuable things that can occur with it. I don't like the way they presently are stating it with I think it's set up as a percentage, if I think I heard that correctly somewhere along the line. But, you know, a lot of places just have like a $5 bed tax per bed, and regardless of what you charge for the unit, which, again, I'm not real sure on whether that's going to work or not. But my question is, when you think of the state parks cabins across the bay here in Homer and all the little cabin rentals that spread around the bay, would this bed tax be something that the state would have to charge in the state parks for all the cabin rentals if this passed?
Now, I'm not an expert on this, but I don't think so. This is this pertains strictly to the Kenai Peninsula borough, and to be even more specific about it, it applies just outside of areas where there isn't already a tax in place. And so, as we talk about the municipalities on the borough, again, Seward already has a bed tax in place, and the percentage of that bed tax is escaping me right at this moment, but they've had a bed tax in place since, I believe, 96 or 97. And so the way that this bed tax would work, again, as I understand it, and it has changed. There have been several amendments added and adopted, and there have been some changes since its original form. But as I understand it currently, basically what happens is it's 3 or 4%. So if we're talking about just for the sake of easy math, a $100 per night room, 4% tax. Now your room is $104, and that's a pass through. They're calling that a pass through. So that's a charge that's given to the customer who stays in that room. And again, not in state parks or anything like that, just in businesses within the Kenai Peninsula borough. And that passes through, and then that goes into a fund that is used for tourism and marketing promotion. And that's how that money will be used. And they're thinking somewhere in the neighborhood of a couple of million dollars that this could potentially generate per year. And that money would be used, and it would be divvied up between the municipalities and the borough, and they would all have to try to get together and figure out how best to spend that money. And that's been kind of a sticking point too, is how do we know how this money is going to be spent? But I hope, Carla, that's answered some of your questions. Are you a traveler yourself? Is this a bed tax or accommodations tax? Is this something, as you travel, that you pay attention to, that you're concerned about?
No, I'm not. I do travel, and quite often when I do travel, I have to pay a bed tax. You know, if you're traveling down the Alaska Highway or you're visiting places, there's often the bed tax that's added on. And, you know, Anchorage, it's a constant thing, too. So
certainly.
Anyway, it's something that I just figure is part of the deal, and it doesn't bother me. But my reason for my questions and my thoughts about this is that Homer's a place with a lot of little funky places all around that they don't charge a whole lot per night. They keep it cheap. And, like, I live out here, out East Road, and Seaside Farms, they allow, you know, they have all kinds of little accommodations depending on what you can afford, and you can even park a tent in the field. And do you have to pay a bed tax if you park a tent in the field, or do you have to pay a bed tax if you're in a little shanty cabin? Like, we have a cabin across the bay that we rent out by the night, and it we don't advertise it. We're not members of the Chamber of Commerce or anything, and it's mostly that friends contact us and say, hey, are you still renting out your little cabin? We'd love to go over and pick berries or whatever. We've had people that get weathered in over there, and they will contact us and see if they can stay in the cottage for the night. And to me, that's why we have it, to share a wonderful, beautiful place. And we don't charge a heck of a lot, and you can pack several people in it, but... would just like to figure whether or not this is something that I would want to have and would I benefit as a property owner. So I don't know. It's one I'm still thinking about and haven't made up my mind because things are expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And Carla, thank you so much for that call. It sounds like you certainly do have a unique situation, and I wish I had a few more answers for you. I would certainly direct you toward the borough clerk's office, and perhaps they can give you a little bit more information in terms of your specific operation and how this proposed ordinance would apply to your business and what you're doing down there in Homer. So, Carla, thanks so much for that call this morning. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. And we're going to stick with the phone lines. It looks like we have a caller on line two. Carolyn is with us. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. I have an issue that I'm interested in and have been for a number of years since I have seen so many terrible accidents on our highway. I am very interested in getting a railroad from the Anchorage Airport into Homer. And it isn't such a big, it's a big, huge idea, but I think it would improve the safety, definitely, and it would move people down here more quickly. One of the things I've been talking to politicians, and Mark Begich has said, is that there's watch the light rail to the valley, because if that is successful, then the time might be just right to bring the railroad into the Kenai Peninsula area. I thought, I lived in Hope for a while, and there's a Chicoloon Flats, and I thought a great train route would be to go into Nikiski, where people could get off the train, rent a car, go fishing, come back, put their fish on the train, go right to the airport, and avoid the highway. And then Anchor Point would be another place. Anchor Point would need some revitalization, and a little train stop there would encourage people to rent a car, come into Homer, stay in the Anchor Point area or in the Nelchik area perhaps and fish, and then come back and safely get on a train and return back without the accidents and the hazards. And train travel is very, very relaxing and can be very safe if done correctly. So I guess what I'm saying is we need to look at our politicians as we elect them and look for a very big view, a futuristic view, not the narrow what we can do in 5 years, but what can we do in 15 or 20. And I think a railway is a very, very viable thing to do in Alaska. It would bring jobs. It would encourage tourism. People love to travel on trains, oftentimes don't drive for whatever reason. And it would make a possibility for Homer people to get to the airport very quickly and leave your car in Homer and catch the train.
Well, certainly an interesting topic. It's just transportation here in South Central Alaska in general is a topic ripe for discussion, and certainly we know that our highways have the potential to be quite dangerous. I know the State Department of Transportation over the next year or so is doing what they can, trying to add some turnouts and some things to make that drive down to Homer along the Sterling Highway a bit safer insofar as they can, working with just two lanes. I'm curious, Carolyn, have you done much traveling via train, via rail?
Canada, across Canada by train, and Fairbanks on our Alaska Railroad train. And both times it was really relaxing. I met some wonderful people, and I got to where I was going safely and felt rested and didn't have the hassle of a car, you know, driving, and I could look out the window. And it was a wonderful way, and everyone seemed to be in a very great mood. It wasn't like road rage or seeing people around the corner that are able, you know, traffic is heavy and you're behind them. It's just like we're going the speed we're going, and you kind of have to kick back and relax. I don't know how long it would take. I've talked to various people, and they said that perhaps a couple of hours off the time driving, which also would be an advantage if people want to get to Anchorage a little faster for appointments or things.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'm guilty of having never traveled via rail myself, but I have heard that it's very, very different from say airline travel, where it's hustle and bustle and get into your seat, hurry up and get to sleep, take a nap, get to your destination on the train. Much more relaxed, as you say, a bit more of a community atmosphere on that rail, because you've got several hours to hang out with those folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And lots of leg room.
and lots of leg room. Well, Carolyn, thank you for that call. And that's certainly a very interesting issue. We see that all over the country, efforts, very strong efforts made to advance light rail transportation regionally. And of course, forever and ever and ever, calls been made to expand systems like Amtrak and those sorts of things to sort of unclog our highways and make things safer. And certainly Alaska does have its own history with rail travel. The trip up to Denali is very popular. That's one that's certainly on my Alaskan bucket list. I hope to make that trip sometime soon. But Carolyn, again, thank you for that call, and thank you for giving us that to think about, the potential of say a 2-hour trip where you don't have to drive from Homer to Anchorage. I'm sure that is something that would be very enticing to a lot of people. The question, of course, when you're talking about a big project like that, who's going to pay for it? So very interesting questions. And again, the way to do that is to hammer your hammer is kind of a strong word, but to ask your local leaders about what they think of those sorts of issues and get those on the radar for our elected officials. So Carolyn, again, thank you for that call, and thanks for giving us something to think about. Again, tune to the coffee table this morning here on KDLL and KBBI. It's an open lines coffee table. That means you are the guest, and we want to hear from you as we get into election season. We're going to be trying to get as many political figures as we can in here, folks running for office, see what they think about things. But this week, before we begin that run, we want to hear what you think about some of these issues. And so far this morning, we've discussed the two big ballot propositions on the statewide ballot. SB 21 is Proposition 1, and we've discussed that. We've also discussed Proposition 2, which will be showing up on your November ballot. That proposition has to do with legalizing marijuana in Alaska, much like it's been done in Colorado and Washington the past year. But again, we want to hear from you. 1-800-979-5224 is the number for our KDLL listeners. And if you're tuned into KBBI on the Southern Peninsula, it's a local call, 235-7721. And of course, you can always find us on Facebook. Drop us a line there. Just search for KDLL or KBBI, and we'll be paying attention to that as the show continues this morning. So drop us a line on Facebook if you want, and we can get in touch with you that way as well. And we've also spoken about, we just heard about the bed tax, some interesting questions from Carla in terms of having a much smaller operation. When we think of the bed tax, it seems pretty cut and dried. Most places have a bed tax. You check into a hotel, it's just a percentage of the fee that's tacked on. Relatively low, thrown out as the idea here on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. About 3-4% is the rate here. It's something like 12.5% in Anchorage, higher in other places. So we've been discussing that issue as well. And it looks like we're going to go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Sally joins us. Good morning, Sally.
Well, I just want to put in another thing for a train. I've been here for 41 years, came from Jersey, and I think it's a terrific idea. I think we ought to have a loop. I think it shouldn't be a regular track. I think it should be a raised track so that we could eliminate killing moose. We could deal with it. You know, we could ship with it. And the biggest thing would be is if we could get the Native associations to open up the other side of the peninsula, which is basically all theirs. Can you imagine if we had a round trip that came all the way down to Homer and all the way back up on that spot that nobody ever sees? And goes back to Anchorage. I think it would be terrific.
That would, and as we were talking a little bit ago about the bed tax and what that has to do with tourism.
Oh, get it done with. Give it a try. If it works for Seward, fine. They're only open in the summer, but it could work. And these people are these people. I love tourists. I still have a badge that goes, I love tourists. Ask Hazel or me, if for those who don't remember Hazel. Started the berry business.
Okay.
And she was one of the first mayors, and she created the bypass. It's basically it.
All right.
I love tourists, but they cause a profit, but they also cause a cost. And I think a bed tax might cover the extra things that we have to do for them. I mean, look at the difference that was made on the spit with that bike path. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when it goes all the way out the end of the road? You know, I won't walk on East End Road. I think there's lots of things we could be doing in this town that, but obviously a train is more than this town. But don't get a train that runs on the tracks that you have to use pesticides and you have to kill moose and you have to cut grass and you get car crashes. Put it all up in the air. It works other places.
Certainly great. Thank you so much for that call, Sally.
Thank you.
Yes, have a great morning. And,
it's beautiful out.
Oh, it's just great. And I guess I didn't know that there was this much, that there was were so many ideas for increasing rail travel around the peninsula. And as we just heard from Sally, of course, land ownership issues aside, certainly some great potential for sightseeing for folks. And that's as we talk about tourism, that's something that folks opposed to the, or not necessarily opposed to the bed tax, but folks have brought up as a point, is that at what point is tourism too much? How many tourists are too many? Because we're kind of on the waning days of our big push of tourists here on the peninsula, especially the central peninsula, with dip netting season winding down, the final hours really of dip netting season, the traffic's begun to slow down. But that's a real point of contention for folks who live here year round, is this 2 to 3 weeks where we have a lot of out-of-town visitors, and it's a lot to deal with. So balancing those questions of drawing people here, but also wanting to keep things relatively calm and safe, too, a big balancing act. We're going to go back to the phones. Line 2, Roberta joins us. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning. And just wanted to throw in a couple of thoughts. SB 21, I support repealing it. Our oil czar, governor, wrote it. And it passed by one vote with Kevin Meyer and Peter Michicki, both employed by oil companies, were the passing vote. And I think it was a definite conflict of interest, but our law allowed them to vote. And I think that law needs to be changed. And SB 21 or ACEs needs to be rewritten fairly. I wanted to throw in ocean acidification. We keep talking about our fossil fuel development here, and there are some very scary facts coming in about ocean acidification. It's been on the radio the last 2 to 3 days, and our state government does not even talk about the part our fossil fuel development is contributing to this travesty. And the writing is on the wall. And then the other thing, Parnell has requested a rewrite of all critical habitats, state refuges, and sanctuaries to allow permitting of development, including Kachemak Bay. They want jet skis reintroduced and the parking of jackup rigs. So we've got some issues in this state that, for those of us who care about conservation and care about the environment, we are pretty much the small voices, and we really need to take care of this state. And for the way that Governor Parnell has sued the government so relentlessly since he's been in office, I'm really curious about how much money that has cost us. In fact, he just did filed a friendly support of Hobby Lobby. And so I'm just really wanting to get the state to start talking about these really serious things coming down the line.
Very good. Thank you so much for that call, Roberta. And these are really big issues. When you start talking about things like ocean acidification and the effects, not only the effects that ocean acidification has on our environment, but the causes of that, I feel like one of the big problems is trying to connect all those dots, because as we look for solutions and as we look to our elected officials to help develop those solutions, they want to know specific cause and effect. They need a straight line. This caused this, and this is how we fix it. But when you're talking about systems that are so immense and talking about global warming or climate change and how that's affecting the ocean and ocean currents, and then how that in turn affects things like salmon runs, connecting all those dots to be able to come up with concrete solutions becomes a very tall order. And of course, in our divided political times, it's hard enough just to get to agree on the price or to get two people to agree on the fact that the sun will come up tomorrow morning, let alone solving problems like ocean acidification. So again, big issues, big problems, but thank you so much, Roberta, for calling and bringing those up and giving us some more to think about. We return now to the phones. Line 1, Tony is with us. Good morning, Tony.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How are you this morning?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on a few things Roberta brought up.
Sure.
In regards to the parking of the oil rigs, possibly in Kachemak Bay, some other things that Parnell brought up with initiatives. But I guess most importantly, I just wanted to bring up, some people really get emotional and pulled from one side or the other based on their political views and personal beliefs and whatnot. But I think what we should all remember in the end is that big world, we have a lot of people with many different views, different religions, races, things like that. So people might see things differently, and the more so be open as opposed to just completely being against something without completely seeing all the facts, doing your research, and things like that. One thing I wanted to bring up was we've been having some dismal king salmon runs, especially here in the South Central, but all over, you know, the Yukon, the Kuskokwim, Canada, Washington, we've been having poor king salmon runs, and they've been contributing a lot of it. You know, people are blaming the, and I'm not a fisherman, by the way. I support fish, but that's all. But a lot of people are blaming the set netters, the drifters, the pollock, you know, and the pollock fishermen offshore certain deals. And then some people are blaming snaggers and other people coach. But she brought up something about the ocean acidification
that's
going on. And I don't know. I think that we should just let them do the research, do your own research, and come up with your own problems. But for one thing to get nailed on so highly, I mean, we've been around, how long has this country been around? Since the late 1800s, and we still don't have it right. So I think we should just take a step back, and if you don't like the way things are being handled in the government, then, you know, think about who you're voting in the office and go from there. And that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, Tony, thank you so much for that call. And again, a good thing to think about, we were talking about how divisive some of these issues are and how difficult it is to find some common ground, for, especially for our elected leaders who find themselves often in the position of being on constantly on the campaign trail, and it makes it difficult for them to take definitive stance early on in these things, and that makes it very hard to solve some of these problems. And zooming out a little bit and trying to remove some of the emotion and remove some of your own sort of personal beliefs from something, maybe that helps. Maybe that's the way forward. But again, a very tall order. And I'm glad Tony brought up the king salmon problem. And I wish we had more than just a couple of minutes to get into it and take some more calls. But the king salmon problem, as Tony mentioned, across the state is persisting. Low king returns everywhere, and even getting to the point of lawsuits now. We just saw recently. Fishermen on the Yukon involved with some lawsuits in terms of their ability to subsistence fish for kings and having to switch to dip nets, which they had never done before, and a lot of issues in that area of the state. In our part of the state, the lack of kings has drawn other legal challenges or I guess legal maneuvers, you might say, in the form of a ballot initiative that if it goes through, if it makes it through the courts, if it gets all the signatures in 2016, we could possibly be looking at a ballot proposition that would ask Alaskans whether or not they want to keep commercial set netting in urban areas. And so what that really means is here on the Kenai Peninsula, and that would put a lot of folks out of business. But at the same time, we don't know for sure whether that would solve the problem of the king returns, because again, there are so many factors in play between ocean acidification and climate change and river systems, so many things at play. Does removing one piece of that puzzle actually help solve the whole problem? We don't know, and those are questions that we'll be asking, as a news staff will be asking, and that hopefully that you as listeners and members of the public will be considering here in the next couple of months. But as we wind down the show here, I do want to thank all of our callers for calling in this morning. Open Lines Coffee Table is kind of working without a net a little bit, and I appreciate all of our callers for calling in with thoughtful questions and with important issues to bring to the forefront and to put in people's minds and give folks some things to think about as they move through their Wednesday. And of course, I also want to thank our intrepid production team down in Homer, Mr. Terry T-Bone Rinzel and Shady Grove Oliver. And I also would like to welcome our new Morning Edition host, Quentin Chandler, joining the team here on KDLL and KBBI this week. You'll be hearing his voice more and more often as he gets his feet wet here on the peninsula. So a big shout out and a warm welcome to Alaska for Quentin Chandler. We're excited to have him on the team. Look forward to a lot of great work out of him. But again, thank you all so much for calling in this morning. Thank you for listening this morning. It's been a great show and loved hearing the questions, hearing the comments. So again, tune to KDLL and KBBI 91.9 FM and AM 890 Homer. I'm Shaylin Cochran. Have a great morning.